You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rockland, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to the Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I am your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rockland, and I am here to help you stop counting calories, carbs, and fat grams so you can easily get to a healthier weight and get on with your life. That is what it's all about, isn't it? How amazing to wake up and think about your day, not your diet. And you know what? I've been gone from the studio for a couple of weeks. It is so good to be back here with you, and I can't wait to hopefully hear from you and also share some of my thoughts over the last couple of weeks that will help you. If you'd like to join me today, the number here in the studio is 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. Pardon my voice. I just have a touch of bronchitis. Let's hope I don't have a massive coughing fit sometime in the next 50 minutes. Of course, that would be so perfect to have a coughing fit while doing a radio show, but if I do, bear with me. I would love to hear what's on your mind, what is weighing on you, because the real problem with binge eating, stress eating, compulsive or emotional eating is not food. The problem with eating problems is not food. The real problem is what's eating at you. So again, I invite you to call in and talk with me about what's ever going on in your life. Let's work it out. Okay, so here is a question from Lisa. Maybe it's Lisa. Lisa, two S's. I'm going to go with Lisa. Lisa says, I'm not a mom yet, so Mother's Day is really only about my mother. But growing up, she was never a mom to me the way my friends' moms were. We've never been close, and I'm never going to be good enough for her. I'm happy for my friends that they have such good relationships with their mothers, and there's a lot of love there, but every year gets harder because that's just not my mother, and it hurts. I hate that I'm jealous of my friends, and I feel like a bad person because of it. How can I stop feeling this way and just be happy for my friends? And I should, by the way, say last Sunday was Mother's Day. Happy Mother's Day to everyone out there who is a mom or has a mom. Okay, Lisa, here's the thing. If it's not one thing, it's your mother. Ba-dum-bum. Yeah, okay, so just a little psychoanalytic humor for you. First off, you are not a bad person. Feelings don't make you a bad person. Jealousy, envy, all kinds of feelings that may feel bad, feel negative, feel uncomfortable. They're simply reactions to situations. They are not character flaws. They are not character flaws. And by the way, let me just differentiate between jealousy and envy. Okay, jealousy is, I really want what that person has. That person has the best mom in the world. I wish I had the best mom in the world. I wish I had a relationship like my friend has with her mother. I'm so jealous. I wish I had what she has. That's jealousy. Okay, it's more benign than envy. Envy is, I want what my friend has. My friend has a great relationship with her mom. I wish I had that. And you know what? I hate my friend for having that wonderful relationship with her mom. I hate her. I want to punish her. I want to destroy her. I want to take it away from her. I want only bad things for her because she has something that I don't have. Okay? That's the difference between jealousy and envy. But here's the thing, even if you're envious, it's just a feeling. These are just thoughts that go along with the feelings. Feelings are not facts. Wanting to hurt or destroy someone is not the same as actually doing it. Okay, so Lisa, just normalize your feelings. Of course you feel this way. How are you supposed to feel? Are you supposed to be a saint? Oh, I have a horrible relationship with my mother. I'll never be good enough for her. My friends have wonderful relationships. I'm just so happy for them. Yeah, there's your little angel halo, but you're not an angel. You're a human on earth. Guess what? You get to have those feelings. So, okay, so here's my mother's post-Mother's Day conversation for you all. First of all, mothers and all parents do the best they can given their individual circumstances, their temperaments, their upbringing. Really, they do the best they can. But despite their best efforts, despite their good intentions, what is it they say about the road to hell being paved with good intentions? Despite good intentions, mothers may still adversely affect their children, no matter how old their children are. And the way we are mothered impacts our relationship to ourselves, which in turn influences eating, our eating habits. When we're unable to mother ourselves in a nurturing and supportive and kind, responsive way, we may turn to food as a way of coping with painful or upsetting feelings. Because remember, food represents in our psyche is a symbol of mothering. When we talk about comfort food, we're really talking about the wish to be mothered. And the reason that food equals mothering, and by the way, it is doesn't even have to be gender specific. Mothering really, even though it's usually thought of as female, mothering refers to nurturing, loving, kindness, all of those things. And it's thought of as it's your female mother, but it could be anybody. And the reason that we fuse together mothering and food is that our first experience of relationship, our first experience of being held, comforted, held in someone's arms, feeling safe, hopefully seeing their eyes gaze down at us, feel ourselves reflected in that gaze while being fed, gives us the idea that relationship and food are one. And so even though we intellectually may not think of it that way, in our psyche, that's in our unconscious, that's how we think of it. And that's why when we want comfort, when we want to feel fulfilled, when we want nurturing, we often turn to food. So let me break down the following are common types of mothers. Okay, number one kind of mother, intrusive. There is a reason, said one of my patients, the word mother is part of the word smother. Mothers who read diaries when they're not supposed to. Mothers who demand to know what their kids are doing or thinking. Mothers who later on get the keys to their kids' apartments or houses and just show up whenever they want. They think they're welcome to come on in. Those are intrusive parents. This kind of mothering, by the way, is often identified with restricting. Anorexia can be seen as a way of symbolically keeping out intrusiveness, keeping out questions, keeping out food, keeping out boundary violations, but not always. Often, we have intrusive mothers and it upsets us and we eat for comfort. So that's one kind of common mother. Another is called the mini-me mother, the mini-me syndrome. These are mothers who want their children to reflect them, to live up to their own expectations of who their kids should be or who they think they should be, instead of being interested in who their kids actually are as individuals separate from their mothers. This kind of mother conveys the idea that something's wrong if their daughters or sons don't share their mother's mind. For instance, there was a young woman who wanted to learn how to play the drums. And she was told by her mother, don't be ridiculous. We play the piano. We don't play drums. I like piano. I don't like drums. So the implication was, mom likes piano. So how could the daughter possibly want to play the drums? Crazy. I've heard this a few times. One was piano. One was guitar. We don't play guitar. We play piano. The piano is elegant. The guitar is not. Ay, ay, ay. Another mother told her daughter, well, you can't vote. Republican were Democrats. Obviously, this was, let's just say, before the last election. These mothers could not fathom the idea that their daughters had separate wishes, ideas, and beliefs. The only way to assert yourself is by controlling the idea that your mother cannot directly influence one thing, your weight. It's a way of saying, this is my life, this is my body, you can't control my body. So that is another kind of mother. A third kind is indifferent. And there are many reasons why mothers are indifferent. Depressed mothers are incapable of summoning up the kind of energy necessary to be interested and invested in their children. Mothers who were themselves raised by indifferent parents may also be indifferent. Mothers who had intrusive parents might swing the pendulum too far the other way, giving their kids way too much space, seeming indifferent. Sometimes, parents who maybe had like super controlling, intrusive parents decide, hey, I'm not going to be like that to my kids. And so they go too far. They become the parents who don't give boundaries. Now, they don't do it with bad intentions. They do it out of thinking, I don't want my kids to feel controlled by me the way I felt controlled. But what happens is the kids feel like there is something, like they're not getting held, like their parents don't care, they're not setting boundaries. I've had many people say, oh my God, I was such a bad kid when I was a teenager. I was always going out, breaking rules, doing drugs, even though, I consciously didn't, wanted to rebel. There was a part of me was thinking, why aren't my parents doing something? So even though parents may seem indifferent, it may not be coming from an indifferent place, but we don't know that. All we know is how we interpret it. So let me go on. Let me see. And the next one is, wait, I'm not going on that fast. I have more to say indifferent. If your mom did not show enough interest or curiosity, you may yearn for a level of connection and mothering that's unavailable, and that unavailability can register as emptiness, and that can be filled with food, right? When you feel empty and you feel lonely, when you're not getting something, you may feel empty inside. Food symbolically fills that empty hole. It provides a temporary fulfillment. If you felt deprived of nurturing, sometimes you can express that deprivation by not eating. Lots of people do this thing where they don't eat all day. They know they're supposed to eat. Breakfast is the most important meal of the day, right? That you know you're supposed to eat during the day. They don't. That can actually reflect how deprived you feel in your life. And then what happens? You get really, 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 really hungry. Really hungry. And so what happens when you get really hungry? Well, you just can't stop, partly out of emotional hunger, but partly out of physiological hunger. Because if you are starving, if you are ravenous, once you start eating, even if you don't have any kind of, psychological conflict over food, it's hard to stop because you're starving. It takes a while for your brain to register you've had enough. Also, if you have ambivalence about your wish for maternal care, you may fill up on food as a way of expressing your wish for loving fulfillment. But then you can purge it as a way of getting rid of the humiliation of longing. So there's a lot about indifference and emptiness there. Another kind of mother, I call it the little girl mother. These mothers pull for you to take care of them. They often share their problems, ask for your opinions, elicit your concern and care about their well-being. When you're mothering your mother, Nobody is mothering you. There's a term for this, which is that you're called a parentified child, whether it's a parentified adult child or as a kid, a parentified child. Means that you're basically parenting your parent. Could be your mom. Often it's that little girl mom. Sometimes it's your dad, but it's more often your mom. So when you're taking care of your mom and being the mom to your mom, you're not getting a mom. That leads again to deprivation, which can be expressed with that cycle of restricting and binging, or it can. People sometimes skip the whole restricting part or the depriving part, or they say I'm dieting, or oh, the new one is I'm going on an intermittent fasting. Now, that said, many people are doing intermittent fasting because there's a book on this. There's apparently science about it, and they haven't. There's no psychological impetus for it, but a lot of people say they're fasting when really they're sort of unbeknownst to themselves, punishing themselves or expressing their deprivation by not eating. And it can also be resolved simply by binging and filling an internal emptiness. Then there's the intrusive and indifferent. These mothers are overly invested in certain aspects of your life and then totally neglect other areas of your life, often those that need the most attention. This inconsistency can be very confusing and may lead someone to turn away from relationships to food. Remember, if you have the original relationships in your life, if they are marked by all of these things, by intrusiveness, by the mini-me syndrome, by indifference, by little girl mothers who want you to mother them, by intrusiveness and indifference, and that's tough. Why would you choose relationships? How do you build basic trust in people? And that's how we feel fulfilled, by our relationships with people. But if you can't trust people, people are dangerous, people are iffy, you're walking on eggshells on people, or like Lissa says, you're never going to be good enough for people. Well, you're going to get your fulfillment with this symbolic representation of people, aka food. Now, the other kind of mother, the last kind of mother, and I'm sure there's a longer list than this, but this is good enough. This is the ideal mother, and there are ideal mothers out there. These are called the nurturing mothers, mothers who consistently show an appropriate amount of curiosity and care about your emotional and physical well-being. Mothers allow their kids to have their own identities. A long time ago, I knew this woman who adopted two kids from China, and she was so excited she was going to get these twins. And before she got the twins, she was a horseback rider. And I remember she was saying, oh, it's going to be amazing. I'm going to teach the girls to ride. By the time they're two, they'll have been on their first pony. By the time they're three and a half, they'll be riding. By the time they're six, they'll be jumping. They'll get to be in competitions. By the time they're 10. And she had their whole lives planned out. Now, what do you think happened? Do you think these two twins just wanted to become her? I'll tell you what happened, because I saw them a few years later. So one of the twins was the good twin, the one who liked horseback riding, the basic little clone of her mother. The other one was the bad twin. She was labeled as the bad twin. Guess what she didn't like? She didn't like horseback riding. She liked dancing. So this mom just wanted two people to be like little mini-me's of her. Wasn't interested in what her kids liked. Praised the good twin who learned how to be the good twin, right? Ooh, be who mom wants you to be. Give up yourself. Give up your identity. And the other one, who, God bless her, had her own identity, loved dancing. Instead of her mom saying, isn't it wonderful? She loves dancing. I like horseback riding. She loves She loves dancing. It's wonderful. We're all individuals. I love seeing who she is and what she's developing. No, that became the bad thing. She doesn't like horseback riding. Okay. So whatever kind of actual mother you had, the goal here is to cultivate a nurturing response to yourself. The goal is to become the nurturing mother to yourself, the nurturing person to yourself. So to do that, how do you do that? Well, first of all, you want to think about what kind of mothering did you experience? Was it intrusive? Did you have the mini-me syndrome mother? Was there indifference, or did it you experience it as indifference or intrusiveness and indifference? Was it a little girl mother that you had to take care of your mom and then maybe feel guilty for not getting your own needs met? Or, you know, maybe you had a nurturing mother just inconsistently, or consistently if you did, lucky you, you scored the jackpot, and I hope you took your mother out. If she's here, I hope you've celebrated her last weekend. So first identify what kind of mothering you actually experienced. Then you want to look at and recognize, how did it impact your relationship to yourself? Is the way that you were treated, does that sound familiar? Do you, in your own mind, do you treat yourself the way you were treated? Are you indifferent to yourself? Do you feel a need to be different than you are? Do you feel guilty if you have any needs or wants? Because that's all supposed to go to your little girl mommy. So think about all of those kinds of thoughts, and look at how you relate to your friends, because I'm guessing there is a difference. Most of us relate to our friends the way that we would have liked to have been treated. And our pets, often our dogs, our cats, or whatever, birds, potbelly pig, whatever kind of pet you may have. I am guessing that you treat your pets in a loving, nurturing, kind way. You treat others, whether they are canine or feline or what have you, or human, you treat them the way you would have liked to have been treated, in a nurturing, loving way, but you treat yourself the way you were treated. And that's what we want to change. You already have the ability to be nurturing. Just got to turn that towards yourself. So if you treat other people the way you would have liked to have been mothered, and you treat yourself the way you were mothered, that's something to notice. And just start noticing it. And then you say, oh my gosh, look at how I'm talking to myself. I'm being judgmental the way I was judged. I'm being critical the way that I was criticized. What would I say to someone else who was undergoing my same situation? What would I say to someone else? Keep in mind, there are two mothers in your head. There's the voice of the actual mom who raised you. And then there are two mothers. One of them exists in life, or did exist in life. And then there's the mother we internalize. So there's the real mom who's hopefully living and breathing and somewhere out there. And then there's the voice in your head of the mom who raised you. And by the way, sometimes the mother of your present is very different from the mother of your childhood, the mother of your past. But it's the mother of your past that has the most influence. And we want to shift. Just start noticing what's you and what's not you. And you is the way you relate to other people when you are loving and nurturing to them. That's you. When you're unkind, critical, and judgmental of yourself, often when you call yourself you, when you talk to yourself in second person, like, I can't believe you just did that. How could you have eaten that? You're never going to lose weight if you eat that. Sound familiar? If you talk to yourself like that, that's not you. That's someone else talking to you. Whose voice is that speaking so meanly? When you do that, try shifting it to I. I can't believe I ate that. I can't believe I have no willpower. I'm never going to lose weight if I keep eating this way. It's very hard to be as mean in that tone when you come from an I place. Not impossible, but harder than when you come from a you place. So start just reconnecting with your true, authentic voice, the caring, loving you that shows up for other people, but not enough for yourself. When you find a way to nurture, accept, and support yourself, you're not going to use food to cope with sadness, emptiness, frustration, loneliness, or any other painful or upsetting state. And when you stop using food to cope and start using language and words and responsiveness, guess what? You're going to lose weight easily. It's just going to fall off you over time without trying, without dieting, without even thinking about it. That's how it works, folks. The less you think about food and the more you think about how you are towards yourself, the easier it's going to be healthy and lose weight. That's my food for thought opening of the show. Okay, so if you have any questions, I am getting Facebook messages that there is a problem with the call-in line today. And unfortunately, Ronan, the engineer, is not here. So I guess we're not going to get any calls today. If you have any questions, feel free to message me through Facebook, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin. Okay, so I just got a message from our weekly caller, Nicole. She says this. She says, okay, I had a panic attack a few days ago. I feel it physically in my body. It's 3 days later, and I'm just starting to feel better. Is it cortisol? What's going on with me? I also blew up physically. It feels like I had gained weight from it. I think it's hormones, but want your professional input. Nicole, can we have sort of a text, a Facebook text exchange? Let me know what happened 3 days ago. If you can let me know. Usually, panic attacks are different from anxiety attacks. Often, panic attacks have no precipitating factor, but often we think we're having a panic attack. We're really having an anxiety attack. So, okay, she is answering me. Basically, so what was going on right before it started? She said she went to the emergency room. So if you can share where you were, you know, what was going on right before this happened, and also what the symptoms, it was, okay. So she's saying nothing specifically happened, but it was a combination of stuff that happened that week. Okay, so what were the things that happened that week? Because I'm guessing that this was probably an anxiety attack, which often the symptoms can feel the same. And sometimes there's not like, okay, at you know, 11:58, this happened, and at noon, I had the anxiety attack. It can be cumulative. Our unconscious minds can be making sense of it. There could be all kinds of things going on that's out of awareness, but not out of operation. Okay, so here we go. She said nothing specifically happened, but it was a combination of stuff that had happened in the week. She had a fight with her sister. Earlier that week, her dad's face blew up and he went to the emergency room and she was so worried. Anxiety attack, yeah. And then she went to dance class because that's usually my therapy and makes her feel better, but it didn't feel better. Well, that's because dance class, moving your body, yoga, all of those things may feel better afterwards, but really all they're doing is calming your body. They are not changing the way you think. They are not changing the way you process what happens in the world. So that's why people go to therapy. If going to a workout class, if going to yoga or a dance class was truly therapeutic in the therapy sense, there would be no therapist. You just go work out really hard. Your body would feel better. And that would be that. But that's not how it works. We have thoughts and beliefs that lead to feelings that lead to behavior. Now, sometimes these thoughts and beliefs are so unpleasant and scary that that we don't allow ourselves to consciously think them. So she stopped therapy 2 months ago. Needs to find someone else. Okay, so let me see if I can help you, Nicole. Tell me about the sister, the fight with the sister. What did that mean, first of all? And then tell me about what it meant that your dad's face blew up and he went to the emergency room, which is very scary and could have all kinds of meanings. When something sudden happens out of the blue, I don't know if he had some kind of allergic reaction or, you know, what was going on. Whatever happened, there could be meaning to that. And so it's very important that we look at the meaning. So Nicole, she's writing. I want to hear more about the fight with the sister and also about what it meant that that your dad had that very unpleasant situation. Because as I face, yes, okay, so he's saying the face blowing up meant his throat might blow up too. He would stop breathing. Very scary. She was scared for his life, that he would die. God forbid. Yes, God forbid. I'm glad he's okay. Very scary. And so there's something about, for some people, Nicole, you tell me if this resonates with you, that the sudden randomness of life, that everything seems fine, and suddenly something super scary and unexpected happens, means that the world is unsafe. We're not omnipotent. I mean, we intellectually know we're not omnipotent, all-knowing, and omniscient, all-knowing, and all-omnipotent, all-powerful. We know that. We intellectually know that. And yet we like to think that somehow we can see things coming and be prepared. We won't be caught off guard. If we can imagine all the bad things that might happen, if we can see it coming, we feel safer. And then something happens absolutely out of the blue, and it scares the heck out of us. So, you know, for example, I had a patient who was terrified of driving. Terrified of driving. She was so sure that she was going to get in a car accident and that something terrible was going to happen to her. Terrified of driving, terrified of flying. Basically anything moving in a vehicle. She wouldn't get on a plane because then she would have to trust that the pilot and co-pilot were going to take care of her. And by the way, pilot and co-pilot were stand-ins for parents, right? Can't trust that that parents are going to be able to take care of you. That translates to the plane. You feel unsafe, but this person wouldn't even get on a plane. So she had to be in control. She would drive, but she was terrified that something bad was going to happen to her. And she was, every day it was like at work, she was like hyper-vigilant, and sometimes she wouldn't even take the freeway because she got a bad feeling that something bad was going to happen. So she would take surface streets and take her an hour to get to work. She had a terrible, terrible feeling that this was the bad thing that was going to happen. She didn't conceive that anything else bad would happen. And then her husband had a heart attack. He was okay. He was okay. But he had a pretty significant cardiac arrest, and took, you know, months to recover, and it was just kind of a cataclysmic event in her life. And it was such a wake-up call that you can't see the bad thing coming. There was, even though she was terribly scared, and Nicole, I don't know if you can relate to this, if you think it's going to be this and you put all your eggs in that basket, oh, I know what's going to happen to me and I'm going to make sure it doesn't happen. Then when something totally unexpected, and this really does seem similar in that it's a health issue, it can really upend your world and make you feel helpless and like you have no control. The reality is we don't have all control. We don't have total control. We do have some control. But it can feel like either or. And when something happens that reminds us that we don't have control, it's really scary. It's very anxiety producing. So I wonder, Nicole, if you can maybe speak to if that resonates with you. She's saying yes, she feels that. It's just scary, and it's so scary because it's not just about your dad and your dad's throat closing up and having anaphylactic event or shock, which is horrifically scary, and I'm so glad he's okay. But it's about the world being scary, so frightening that your mind can't grapple with it. So you push it out of conscious awareness, but it's still there. It's out of awareness, but it's not out of operation. It's basically the definition of unconsciousness. These are hidden thoughts. You're not aware that you're thinking them, but you're thinking them unconsciously. And then you have an anxiety attack because it all just comes up, and then your body expresses it. So important to break down what are the ideas and beliefs surrounding these events of the week. And that goes for Nicole, and it's going for anyone who's listening. If you have an anxiety attack, something like this that seems to come from the blue, look back at your week and look at what happened and really try to pinpoint, what does it mean? What does it mean that that thing happened? What does it mean about you? What does it mean about the world? How does it make you unsafe? Now, Nicole is also sharing that on Mother's Day, she had a fight with her sister because her sister was sabotaging Mother's Day for all of them. Can you share a little bit of what you mean, Nicole? What did she do? I mean, I guess I don't really need to know what she did, but how did you feel about it? And what did it mean to you that your sister was sabotaging? And then what happened when you had the fight? Was there resolution? Did you feel heard? I'm guessing no. I don't know if you're still there. I don't see writing. Nicole, are you still there? My Facebook does not show little writing. Okay. So it looks like, oh, she's there. So, Nicole, she said it got cut out. Okay. I'm sorry. Hopefully you guys didn't. Oh, it looks like we're having all kinds of technical issues there. Oh, and I was so articulate. So Nicole, let me know what happened with the sister. What did it mean? How did it go? Did you feel heard? What were your feelings about what she was saying? Did you feel helpless? Did you feel frustrated? What were your feelings? She's writing. So often we can, she felt hurt. Yeah. She felt hurt. Anything else, whatever comes to mind. She said she didn't. She said she didn't. She didn't want to talk anymore. She tried to ruin her mood. Okay. She said, okay, here we go. I know it's difficult. It is very, very difficult to get in touch with these painful, difficult feelings. It's very difficult to get in touch with angry, upset, hurt feelings towards people you also love. But it's necessary to get in touch with and process them. The only way to get rid of these feelings, as counterintuitive as it sounds, is to feel them. So she's saying that her sister was upset that Nicole woke up and brought flowers for mom just from her and not from sister too, not from the both of us. Then sister said she didn't want to talk to Nicole, tried to ruin her mood. Didn't want to talk to her because she made the flowers only from her. Okay, so that's pretty painful. So that's pretty reactive. I wonder what you thought of that, because when I just read that, I thought, wow, that is a really strong reaction. You don't want to talk to your sister because she didn't put your name on, this is not, your sister didn't want to talk to you, Nicole, because you didn't put her name on the flowers from both of you. You're not allowed to bring flowers just from mom. What the heck? So I would imagine you may all feel other things other than hurt. What might you have felt? And what did it mean to you Nicole, that she did this? Yeah. What about, I don't want to put words in your mouth. So like, I'm guessing resentful, angry, like mystified, confused. Like this is such a strong reaction on Mother's Day. And by the way, was this in front of your mother? Nicole is saying she's trying to tap into those feelings. So again, I don't want to put feelings in you. I don't want to suggest that you were feeling these things. However, it's very likely that you might have felt feelings that are so forbidden to you. Yes, angry and confused. Yes, that you might have felt feelings that were forbidden to you. And that's why they went underground into your unconscious. But they're still there and came out as an anxiety attack in your body. So now your body's having an anxiety attack instead of, oh, she ruined it for mom too. How do you feel about that? She ruined Mother's Day for mom just because you didn't add her name. What? What the heck? There's some strong feelings there. And regarding the fact that you felt physically bigger, I'm going to suggest that there's a strong mind-body connection. And sometimes, check this out, this is cool. I mean, maybe you won't think so because you're not feeling, because you're feeling bigger, but you are feeling big feelings. And then you feel bigger. Sometimes we can experience ourselves as bigger, or because we have big feelings. We literally feel bigger. We look in the mirror and we experience ourselves as bigger. Our perceptions are that we are bigger because of what's going on in our mind. And if anyone doesn't believe me, think about a time that maybe you looked in the mirror and thought, hey, I look okay. I'm looking good. I feel pretty darn good. And then 5 minutes later, you look in the same mirror. Maybe you're just before you go out, just to double check everything's looking good. And suddenly you look bigger to yourself. Suddenly you don't look the way you looked 5 minutes ago. You look bigger. You're like, oh, distortion. What's happening? So that is the mind-body connection. Cortisol cannot in 3 days make you blow up like that. But your mind can make you experience yourself as blowing up like that. So Nicole is saying, let me catch up. Okay, so sister ruined it for mom. Sister was jealous. Sister felt upset. She didn't do it. She was so upset she ruined it for mom. She always ruins everything. Ooh, always. So there's trouble in sister land. Big feelings. Yes. Nicole is saying yes to big feelings. Big feelings, big you. And what's happening here is that the big feelings are getting expressed somatically through your body. So you're not saying, I am so mad at my sister. I am so hurt and upset and so pissed off at her. She ruined Mother's Day for Mom, and she always does that. And I have this big, intense bunch of feelings towards her right now, and she's just, ugh, she is on my not happy with this person list. That is forbidden. So then it becomes, those are your feelings, right? And your thoughts. That's forbidden. It becomes, the body expresses it. Oh, I'm big. I'm big. My body feels the anxiety, not my thoughts. I'm not having thoughts. I'm having a physiological cortisol response. So what you do, which of course we've talked about on the show before, is that your body expresses what is hard for your mind to get in touch with. Your body expresses the feelings. And what we want to do is convert those somatic, physical body experiences to thoughts and emotions. And so I would say, what are the big feelings? What are the big feeling emotions, not bodily sensations? What are the big emotions? And if you can hear me, you think about it. We have a couple more minutes. This is the first time I've used interactive modes of connecting. I got, you know, I'm on the radio. I got Facebook going. It's cool. I should open that up from now on. Anyone wants to, you know, text me on Facebook instead of calling in, that's cool. Maybe I'll add Twitter too. All right, she's writing something right now. So here's the thing, while she's writing, big emotions, she says, you know, if you are angry, confused, fed up, can we take a moment to notice the irony of that expression, fed up? Yes, you are fed up. You are fed up, understandably. I'm guessing since she always does this, she seems extremely reactive, given what you're telling me. Since you're fed up, and she always does this, it's not just about this Mother's Day, it's about a lifetime of stuff happening. And that needs to be processed. I'm not saying your sister is a bad person. I'm saying your sister is very triggering for you. And that needs, she's saying, no pun intended. Oh, but that's your unconscious speaking, Nicole. Fed up. So your unconscious, you know, is speaking to us, and we need to get more in touch with what are those big feelings? What are those big thoughts? What does it mean? This doesn't mean you go and talk to your sister. Oh, let me be very clear. This does not mean that you, or if you're listening out there, if you have a similar situation, it is not always right. It is usually not the best. I shouldn't say usually. It's often not the best idea to go and talk to someone who is this reactive and unreasonable. But you can still work through those feelings. You can work through those feelings about someone who's no longer with us on this earth. So very important to start translating, what is your body saying? Your body is talking. We just have to listen. Nicole, thanks for being interactive in a Facebook text, Facebook Messenger with me. I'm so glad that I was able to answer your question. I would be happy to answer it next week as well, if you want to talk more about this voice to voice. I'm glad that this resonated. So stay curious, not critical, everyone. If you're doing something you don't want to do with food, or if something's happening that you don't understand, it's for a reason. Something is going on, and you can't process your feelings through your body. You can't work out your feelings by doing yoga or punching something. Yes, you will feel, your body will feel relaxed, but that doesn't change your mind. Okay, that is our show for today. Thank you so much for being here today with me. I am so happy to spend this hour with you, and I am here on the Dr. Nina Show on LA Talk Radio every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific. on LA Talk Radio. And the show is later made into a podcast, The Dr. Nina Show on LA Talk Radio, available on Apple Podcasts and anywhere you get a podcast. If you like the show, please do me a big favor and write a review, or at least give it a rating. It means so much to me, because the more ratings and reviews that we get, the more the show can reach more people in searches, and the more it can help people. And that's what it's all about, right? So I would appreciate that so much. Have a great week, and I will see you next Wednesday. Bye for now.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.